Well, of course, that's the that was the impact of the 9/11 plane bombings and the.
Well, it was always there, latent. It had been coming.
Yeah, I mean, it's also true that
just to be positive.
Well, yeah, I don't know. I mean, it has been depressing that so many months after this, Bush's popularity is so high. Although you do get some Democratic hacks, I guess the majority leader saying, no, we shouldn't go bomb Sudan yet. Let's go after Osama bin Laden. I mean, I guess that's supposed to be a policy difference that has shocked Bush into saying, you're not patriotic. You got to do everything I say without any discussion. And some of the Democrats are saying, well, let's talk about, let's bomb here rather than there. Let's go after these caves rather than those caves. I suppose that's their great courageous opposition. I mean, it's not much opposition.
It's not kind of like a bunch of sick, vile apes. We haven't evolved. Is that the correct pronunciation of his name, Osama?
I think it's Osama bin Laden, but I don't know. I mean, I never met the man, although some people say I look like him.
Has Osama bin Laden murdered 2,500 to 5,000 children every month in Iraq due to sanctions every month for years up until present? Those are United Nations numbers.
Well, of course, the claim of those who would challenge that would say, well, yeah, the United Nations sanctions are in place.
No, the United States sanctions.
I mean, the U.S. sanctions and the U.S. bombing is in place, but the fact is that these are decisions made by the, Saddam Hussein's government that are resulting
in this. Yeah, but he was America's ally.
He was. And he was armed by the U.S. against Iran, just like Osama bin Laden's forces were armed against the Soviet Union. I mean, it's all pretty slimy shit, if you'll forgive me for putting it that way.
Yeah, well, it's absolute truth, though, and the American people, as the majority, don't know. Yeah. I mean, I was taught land, I'm in the brave.
You're breaking up there, Ed.
Land of the free, home of the brave, and it's just... It's just the land of the conformists and non-questioners.
Well, see, it's sort of like it's the military campaign of the moment, and since the military is always in power, or there are those and the corporations that subsidize them, then you have a situation where, the people that they subsidize are then going to turn against, in another direction, so they subsidize another group against that group, and then, of course, it comes home to roost because of massive subsidies to, in the Middle Eastern situation with the Israeli government. Anyway, it's all a bit beyond the scope of this particular show, but what's happening?
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Okay.
All right.
Okay, thank you, Robert.
Thanks, Ed.
Hey, have Bob on.
I'll mention it to him.
Okay, see you later.
I'll mention it to him. I don't know if I could handle me and Bob in the same studio. Well, we might do something. In the meantime, you can get on the air. Free Radio Santa Cruz's phone number, 427-3772, 427-FRSC. We got about an hour left in this show. I'm going to play a bit of tape now. I was doing some reading, but you can catch this rather than simply listen to me read it. You can read it more quickly yourself. Just wander into Logos or one of the local bookstores, or even look at it in Borders, but don't buy from Borders. I'm still, by the way, boycotting Borders, not reading their wonderful magazines and books, and not being able to use their restrooms anymore. They've closed those down to the public, but I like to buy locally from bookstores, although Bookshop Santa Cruz is not a store that I'm able to use because I'm barred from there by Neil Coonerty, former council member and owner, and one of the original impetuses behind the downtown ordinances, and I guess actually there are a number of stores, local stores, that I am boycotting because of their support of the downtown ordinances, but generally I support buying locally, and the High Times that covers these stories that I was reading is on the market. I mean, it's on the stands right now. It's the April 2002 issue. As I said, I was away in Los Angeles for Santa Barbara, Los Angeles, Santa Monica for the last 3 days, and I was there to assist Becky Johnson, a local activist concerned with homeless civil rights issues. But in Los Angeles, she was concerned with events that happened in, I guess it was August and September of 2000 at the Democratic Convention. I'm not quite sure exactly which month it was, but it was thereabouts. And she got hit by a police officer. Actually, there were police officers hitting and shooting everywhere. And quite amazing that I didn't get the crap beaten out of me as well. This was seen by 7 witnesses, and so she is now suing the LAPD and was called down there to federal court before a federal judge to attempt to settle the issue. They have a sort of a formal settlement conference. So what you're going to hear now is a discussion by her attorney, Jim Fassbinder, afterward, of what happened at that conference and where the case is now sitting, and where what happens next.
In his recollection of that,
Okay, well, it's about 8:40 p.m. We're here at Philippe's in downtown Los Angeles. The joint with sawdust on the floor, brought here by the infamous attorney. Well, let him introduce himself. Your name, sir?
Hi, I'm Jim Fassbinder.
Jim, you've been spending your whole afternoon and evening hanging around this dusty old courtroom. What was that all about?
Well, this is a mandatory settlement conference in Becky Johnson's case against the Los Angeles Police Department. It's a negotiating session that's required by the local rules here in federal court. Unfortunately, we never got an offer that we considered reasonable. Apparently, we're the first case, according to the lawyer there from the city of Los Angeles, we're the first case from the convention events to reach the stage of having the settlement conference in federal court. So it looks pretty clear that the city isn't willing to negotiate yet. They're waiting to see what happens with other cases and how they progress. But if we were willing to settle the case dirt cheap, they'd be willing to give us a little money. But we're not
how cheap is dirt cheap there, James?
They offered a total of $15,000, and we think that 4 or 5 times that is the minimum that's reasonable.
What were the damages that were done? What actually happened?
Well, why don't you ask Becky, who's sitting here, what happened to her, because she knows at least as well as I do, and better, I think.
Give us a brief recap, Becky. I think you've actually stated this on the radio before. I wanted to get a new voice heard from, but hey, give us the story.
Well, on August 14, 2000, Democratic National Convention, right after I had purchased a hot dog, I almost got stampeded by the crowd, and then a row of cops came by shooting bullets and hitting people with clubs. I had ducked down behind a car wash sign to not get shot, and then I was beaten by a police officer, and when I tried to move, as he had said, I also fell into a stairwell and was sustained some injuries for that too. And my crime was basically standing on a street corner. I was not arrested. I was not threatened arrest. I was beaten, and the people around me also were beaten.
The saddest thing here is that at the settlement conference, it became clear what the strategy for the city of Los Angeles is. And that strategy is not to deny that people were beaten, not to deny that people were injured, not to deny that they should not have been beaten or injured, but the core of their strategy is you don't know who it was, and tough luck, because under the law, you cannot sue a municipality for what their police officers do to you. You can only sue under that theory if you claim that the police officers were improperly trained. But if you don't know exactly which officer hit you, and you can't name them, you can't sue the city that employed them. Now, what's kind of outrageous about that to me is that this isn't true in a car accident situation. In other words, if a police officer negligently runs you over, and everyone on the scene agrees that it was a police officer for the city of Los Angeles, you can go ahead and sue and you can win. But under Section 1983, if they did it on purpose, because you were exercising your First Amendment rights, not as an accident, then you can't sue, because the Supreme Court has, in its inestimable wisdom, come to the conclusion that cities can't be bad, that they can't be intentional doers of wrong. Only their individual employees can be. And, of course, we all know that's bullshit, but the Supreme Court doesn't. And so you have to actually identify the person who hit you for an unconscionable or non-constitutional reason. You can't just prove that it was actually a City of Los Angeles police officer. You have to go beyond that.
This is going to be a problem for you then, and I guess the case is slated to go to trial in June, is that right?
I think it's July, but there's two things. First of all, we have a more difficult hurdle to jump than we should have to. If we can prove that the reason that Becky was hit and injured was because of a failure to either properly train or properly supervise the police officers, we can still win on what's called a Monell claim. We think we have an excellent chance of doing that.
What is a Monell claim, and what does that mean? You don't need to have the name of the officer, in other words.
You don't have to prove who the officer was. You just have to prove that as a result of either an official city policy or a failure to properly train or a failure to properly supervise the police officers, you were injured in a way that constitutes a constitutional rights violation. And in this case, it's going to be the testimony quite clearly that there were many police officers on the scene, and the City of Los Angeles admits that their police officers were instructed specifically not to allow any other officers to engage in unconstitutional acts. And so we're going to argue, and I think convincingly, that given the large number of police officers present, that they were all imbued with the authority and the obligation to supervise each other, and that they simply didn't do that because they let this officer do these things, which the city has characterized as rogue officer activities. That may be, but they were surrounded by a whole bunch of other officers who obviously didn't do what they were ordered to do either.
So you have to show not only that it was a rogue officer who did it, or actually you have to show that even if it were a rogue officer, that the supervisors had a duty to supervise. They didn't do so effectively, and in so doing, even though you can't find who the officer was, their failure to supervise means that Becky wins damages, although not punitive damages, I understand, right?
There are no punitive damages available against the municipality for the same reason. The Supreme Court has once again decided, despite quite a bit of evidence to the contrary, that a municipality is incapable of intentionally doing a bad thing. And that's bullshit. If anybody has studied the history of the civil rights movement in the South, Ku Klux Klan was wide open in the streets of many cities in the South, and police departments were ordered not to do anything about it. There's tons of examples in American history of municipalities that were just fundamentally corrupt to the point where they were essentially criminal enterprises. But, the Supreme Court says, no, that can't possibly happen.
And Becky, you went into those chambers to seek a settlement with, I guess, the two gentlemen from the LAPD or the City Attorney's Office of Los Angeles numerous times. Was it a waste of time? Was it a productive afternoon? What was your feeling about it?
It was productive in the sense that the LAPD sort of tipped their hand in what their case is going to be, and we got a lot of useful information about what kind of strategies they're going to use in court to defend themselves. As far as the settlement goes, it seems clear that they didn't come ready to really authorize any kind of reasonable payment. And I really would prefer to go to trial, have get a conviction, and set policy changes in the LAPD.
If you win, you won't necessarily get any policy changes, right?
That's true, but going to trial with the publicity it could generate, with the open trials, with the everything on public record, it's a way for the community to really examine what the LAPD is doing and hopefully hold them to task. I mean, that's my fond hope. Obviously, it hasn't happened very much here in LA, but it's still worth working on and seeking that kind of justice rather than just let a city police department just violate their own laws, violate procedures, and basically beat and shoot anybody in sight. I mean, well, that's just not a reasonable policy.
Much more convenient than arresting people. And you, on the other hand, Ben Mazzell, were arrested by the same LAPD. No, you weren't.
No, I was beaten considerably earlier. I had been at the entrance to the convention center where they were screening the delegates, doing a solo performance piece.
Which was?
Focusing on the Fourth Amendment, the right to be free from unreasonable search and seizure, and how the delegates and reporters entering were having their rights abused. It was a step right up, folks, and lose your constitutional rights. They don't have warrants to search you. They don't have probable cause. And exercising your First Amendment right to represent those who elected you as delegates is not a basis to violate your Fourth Amendment rights, but you're sheep. You'll put up with it.
Fourth Amendment, of course, is the right to be free from unreasonable search and seizure.
Yes.
And you were saying that the delegates were allowing themselves to be searched inappropriately?
Well, they certainly have the discretion to allow themselves to be searched. The violation came when they were compelled to in order to exercise their duty as delegates.
So, what happened when you were there?
Well, I was doing this for a good 40 minutes without any interference, and apparently some of the officers nearby got tired of hearing me doing so in a theatrical tone and declared the area off limits and told me I had to leave, and when I politely and firmly declined to, they started wailing on me.
So what kind of injuries did they create?
Well, the first dozen shots to my midsection didn't injure me significantly. I'd been doing martial arts long enough to just roll with them and absorb them, so there was contact, but no.
With a baton or with a fist?
With a baton. And when the first officer couldn't move me that way, his buddy started taking baseball bat swings for my knees. I managed to step over the first one, and the second one caught me in the calf, leaving an ugly bruise. And at this point, U.S. Justice Department mediator stepped in and told them that he didn't care what they did off in an alley somewhere, but they couldn't do that on his block.
Well, how public-spirited of him.
Well, you know, it turns out there's somebody honest there. It's a, you know...
Honestly corrupt, I like that.
I'm not going to put the one guy who did his job down.
Now, so having said this, your defender, so to speak, what was the reaction of the individuals who were, should we say, teaching you a good lesson?
They stepped back to the skirmish line 30 feet away where they'd come from, and I didn't have any direct further exchange with them, so.
Well, what did you do then? Did you hobble forward and continue to do your theatrical piece?
I continued my piece for a while and then headed to the Shadow Convention 20 minutes later.
So, like others, and in quite in contradiction to what I was saying,
leaving just in time to avoid the broader incident in which Becky was wailed on.
Yeah, as well as I was in the midst of that, too. But like other people, you were not arrested. You were, in fact, assaulted and then sort of left to fend for yourself, as I guess happened to many, many other people that evening.
Yeah. I even returned and did the same act the following day. On Tuesday, they had pretty much sealed off the area close to the convention center.
Monday night was the night this actually happened.
Right. On Tuesday, they, you know, turned back the march approaching the center a few blocks away. Anybody earlier in the day approaching who they thought might be a demonstrator was not told they couldn't get there, but that this entrance is closed, go to that one. And after circling all the entrances to the area a couple times, I figured out that there was another way to get right up close. I took a cab.
Clever dog, you.
So the cab was dropping me off the same place the delegates and reporters were getting dropped off, right at the entrance. I popped out of the cab with my sign. There's a lesson there for those seeking to protest at other unofficially sealed off areas. I gather at the New York events a couple weeks ago, they also, you theoretically could demonstrate close if you could get there, but you couldn't get there. And I'd recommend anybody faced with this situation, hail a cab.
Hail, hail. Well, we've been talking with
Ben Mazzell of Madison, Wisconsin.
with James Fassbinder, Maui, and
Becky Johnson, Santa Cruz, California.
And we're here in Los Angeles tonight. Over to you, Chet.
And, of course, this is now Santa Cruz, and you are tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm your host, Robert Norris. This is the last 45 minutes of our three-and-a-half-hour Sunday edition of Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides, the show concerned with civil rights generally on the streets, but we go into a couple other areas as well. We also hopefully get some input from you out there, you listeners. Call-in number is 427-3772, 427-FRSC. Give us a call.
Everybody's wondering what they're gonna do. Everything's a mess, folks are feeling blue. If your troubles got you down so much you can't abide, get on that bicycle and ride. Yeah, get on that bicycle and ride. Neath the sunny skies or along the ocean side, just ride, 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 ride. They're doing it in Eugene, Havana, and Shanghai. Even folks in Boston town are giving it a try, throwing out their gas tanks, the clean air by their side. Just get on that bicycle and ride. Yeah, get on that bicycle and ride. Neath the sunny skies or along the ocean side, just ride, 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 ride. It's good for your heart and it's good for your brain. When those fluorescent lights are driving you insane, your toes will tingle in your shoes when to the pedal they reply. Just get on that bicycle and ride. Yeah, get on that bicycle and ride. Neath the sunny skies or along the ocean side, just ride, 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 ride. You're having troubles with your lovers, the tandem's made for that. You'll work together wonderfully or else you'll just go splat. Gonna shut down Main Street, make the bike paths far and wide, and get on that bicycle and ride. Yeah, get on that bicycle and ride. Neath the sunny skies or along the ocean side, just ride, 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 ride. Ride, 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 ride.
Or drive, 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 drive if you happen to be a man with the sticker mobile as I am. But bicycling is a much better idea. Bike on, you bikers, and who knows, maybe I'll join you. Free Radio Santa Cruz is looking for your input before we wind up this show. We have about another 40 minutes, 427-3772. I tried to reach Michael Schmidt to get his last words before the Tuesday primaries, which are coming up, and I encourage everybody to vote. And frankly, I would say vote for Schmidt on the supervisorial level. I don't know what to say on the Bob Lee, Kate Canlis front. That's up to you. It's on some theories have it that better throw out the incumbent, in which case it would be Kate Canlis, yes, Bob Lee, no. I'm not sure what, maybe a few folks out there have some thoughts. I have problems because both Lee and Canlis are horrible on the drug war, and they also are trying to show who's nastier about prosecuting nasty cases. I mean, everybody, you know, wants to see, well, people who are engaging in violent behavior brought to justice and made to pay, or at least taken off the streets, and that's fine, but most of the court process doesn't involve that. It involves a lot of bullshit that impacts lower-income people or imposes a drug war-type nonsense on folks, and neither of these two are taking a stand on that issue. We don't have any opposition in the sheriff's race, so you can always write in the sheriff of your choice, though, of course, they won't be considered to be legitimate unless the person has law enforcement experience. So at the last Huff meeting, I guess some of us thought about Mike Smith of the Peace and Freedom Party, who's been a peace officer. He hasn't been a police officer. He has been, I think he was involved with one of the jails or prisons. Had my differences with Mike in the past, but I certainly would prefer to see him to Mark Tracy any day of the week. I want to give a special tip of the hat to Daniel Myers, a Palo Alto activist who came down to the Saturday Political Prisoners March from the town clock. I guess it was a week ago. And took a lot of photos, and you can catch those photos online. I thought I had the address online. I'm a-looking. I don't see it now. But he did some great photos, and you can see the pinup activist of your choice, including yours truly in a bathrobe. If you go to the Huff website, Homeless United is the way to get to the Huff website. If you scan the web for Homeless United, you'll find the Huff website. You might check that out. Also, and here's an update from the kind of the increasing dialogue that's happening between the various tent cities or dignity villages, so to speak. There's Dignity Village in Portland, Tent City 3 in Seattle. There's Camp Paradise in Santa Cruz. And then there's this new tent city in just north of Santa Barbara in Isla Vista. I don't know if it has a name. I guess they're calling it Camp Home Sweet Homeless is the most recent name that has been proposed. And they're fighting down there in Isla Vista a proposal to criminalize sleeping. Apparently they've been a part of a park district that doesn't have a law against sleeping, so they're rushing to put in such a law. And the I guess the hearing comes up this week on that issue, and I'll try to give you more documentation as I hear about it. Ironically, in the Santa Barbara City area, the City Council has set up a task force to find ways to set up and legalize sleeping in your vehicle in different places in different ways, whether it's using the Eugene three vehicles to a spot area where there's actually been public areas set up in different places in Eugene, small public areas for parking places with a porta potty and so forth, or whether it's using a large proposal such as the Mike Schmitz proposal to use the county building at night here, the county building parking lot, I should say, the governmental center parking lot or the Emmeline Street parking lot, or whether it's simply to expand more broadly to encourage public-private partnerships, again proposed by Schmidt as part of his homeless working group here in Santa Cruz, and to some extent initiated as a pilot project on private property only through churches with the Byers-Kennedy Amendments of 1995, which were recently, as I said, the whole situation was made much, much worse by a complete failure of political will, well, of course, a continuing complete failure of political will by the Santa Cruz City Council, where Scott Kennedy succumbed to the analysis of John Barisoni, the city attorney, and instead of clarifying the legislative intent of and then the infamous three-day controversy, they put that into law. So at last city council meeting, they made it a law, as I discussed in my recorded show on Thursday, that it is now illegal to have someone in your yard, even a relative, for more than three nights per month. And it's illegal for a business to allow someone to park a vehicle and stay there for more than three nights per month. Not intended by any legislators, written into law by John Barisoni, but now ratified by the Santa Cruz City Council unanimously on Tuesday. Of course, they said that they were going to come back and revisit that, but when I left Crone, our mayor, a message asking him to respond as quickly as he could, because John Barisoni, the city attorney, said he wouldn't do anything until Mayor Crone called him and talked to him, or presumably some council member did, but he was expecting Crone to, because Crone brought up this issue. Crone did not call him, or certainly has not called me to tell me about it. I've gotten no message on my machine, and about 50% of the time, at least, Crone calls back, to his credit, unlike, for example, someone like Mark Premack, who never calls back. That's another one of the reasons I say no on Premack and no on Wormhout, is Premack does not return his calls. And I think one of the key things that a city official has to do, even more a county official, he has to return his calls. He's got to do it. Otherwise, you're not a representative of anybody but yourself. Now, I don't claim to represent anybody. People say, oh, you represent homeless people, but you're not homeless. No, I'm not homeless, and no, I don't represent homeless people. I have my own opinion, and I put it out there. But I do try to return my calls, for that matter. Even people who I don't particularly like, or whose opinions I don't care for, if they call me up, I try to get back to them. City officials who don't do that, I have much less respect for. And the people like, well, I don't think Ed Porter has ever returned a phone call to me, for instance, though I haven't called him recently. And Keith Sugar doesn't return phone calls to me. You know, phone calls about, you know, reasonable, brief questions, don't get a call back. And to me, that's a form of arrogance or abuse, particularly when you're a paid city council member, when that's what you're elected and you're paid. Your job is to deal with the public, even the public that you don't like, even those you disagree with. And that's what we got in office, and we will continue to have in office until we kick their chunky butts out of office, put some other chunky butts in there. Huff has a meeting every Wednesday, as I have repeatedly pointed out, and I encourage people to come to that meeting at 8:30 at Baker's Square at the 1107 Ocean Street. And that's 8:30 in the morning on Wednesday. We're pursuing a number of projects, and we need your help. You've heard about some of them. You heard Steve Weiss from Huff UCSC, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, on campus, which meets at 6 o'clock on Wednesday in the evening, for those of you who aren't early birds, up on the second floor of the Student Center up there. April 15th is the date that some of us have set to try to focus on a large, hopefully, a significant public response to the closing of the Armory and the failure of the city to, example, do anything about meaningful accommodations for Camp Paradise-type experiments, which are really vital considering the city has done nothing to decriminalize homelessness, nothing to increase shelter in terms of real shelter that deals with emergency situations that are coming up every night. And I continue to be of the opinion that we need to have some kind of a tent city where people who are in need sleep in tents in a public location, whether it's City Hall, whether it's a downtown area somewhere, whether it's a park, whether it's a part of the precious Pogonip, you name it, who cares. And that in a well-policed, a well-regulated situation, which continues, which is supported by the community, which says, look, if the city council won't do it, the community has to do it, and we're going to support it as long as it's a legitimate activity. And sleeping is something that everybody needs to do. And by that time, hopefully the courts will have released their tapes on Camp Paradise. That trial has still not gone to appeal because the courts have failed to release their audio tapes, which they're required to do. I may give a call to the attorney in that case, Chris Fredrickson, and see how that's going. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hello, Robert.
Hey.
So I'm thinking like this whole park thing is going to crash itself, man. I think they're giving it enough rope to hang itself.
Well, there isn't really anything there at all. I mean, you got to get huge million-dollar liability and policies and everything else. And
it's going to hang itself, man.
Well, it's not going to happen. I mean, it's never even going to start. I mean, you won't even climb the scaffold. There'll be nothing to hang. It's a PR gesture for these council members who want to pretend they're doing something.
Well, the homeless need to start policing themselves, and then they wouldn't have this issue.
Yeah, well, you got to have a camp to be able to police. And if you can't set up a camp, you can't police it, can you?
Oh, no, man. I'd like to see a lot of elements run out of Santa Cruz, and I'd like to see the homeless do it to save their own. Because there are people out there that want to get back on their feet, Robert.
Uh-huh.
They don't want to make it comfortable, you know what I mean, for them. Because if they get comfortable, then they'll never get their place. They'll never achieve what they wanted. They'll never achieve that.
Well, the elements...
the moment they get comfortable, you know what I mean?
The elements I want to run out of Santa Cruz are the ones on the city council and in the police force that I believe are, you know, producing problems for all of us. And, well, I recognize, as you've pointed out, both here and on KSCO, that, you know, that they're always, you know, bad apples in every barrel. Fact of the matter is that you can create conditions where people will get bad, or that can be perceived as bad just by doing things that we have to do, you know, just to live. And that's the situation, I think, in Santa Cruz and a lot of other cities. You know, you got to take a piss somewhere, somehow.
I mean,
you got to take it out.
What if we could have intervened these individuals that killed this guy with one hand that just got out of the hospital, you know?
Oh, you mean, yeah, Mike Blandon.
I mean, yeah,
whatever his name is.
He had to go through so much crap, get hit by a car, and I believe he's local.
Yeah, I think so.
He's been local all of his life.
Certainly for a part of it, yeah.
Right, and he lost his hand, dude, and they had to fucking kill him because they felt that he was encroaching on their territory.
Well, you see,
these are the motherfuckers.
Slow down. Caller, did you know? Were you present when this murder happened? I mean, I wasn't. Were you?
No, but I know Mike, and Mike is always like the laid back guy.
Right, but nobody has had a trial. Nobody has been convicted. We got Lieutenant Habey's statements in the Sentinel. We got rumor from the street. So, I mean, I'm a little bit. I understand what you're saying, but I'm a little wary of. You follow me?
I know the politics down. I know squatters' politics.
Well, yeah.
You know, don't think I don't know squatters' politics. And people that want to get out of that are the ones that are propagating better things than these individuals that come in.
I'm just saying,
and
you don't know
squats.
What happened. They
ruin it for people that are the coasters are ruining it for the people that are trying to get some momentum.
I don't think so. I think you're wrong. I think the people that are ruining it for everybody are the people, the politicians on the top, who are gutless wonders. I think you could be the nicest campers in the world.
But can you blame them for reacting to what they see?
No, they aren't reacting to what they see. They're reacting to cowardice and bigotry in the neighborhoods. It has nothing to do with the reality.
They're reacting to what they smell and what the problem is.
No, they're not. They're reacting to their fears.
And what propagates their fears?
No, what propagates their fears are a number of things. But a lot of their fears are unjustified, just like black people were treated like shit for years and years. And they weren't treated like shit because there were a few bad apples in the barrel, which is what people like Booker T. Washington was saying. Well, let's prove we're all good Negroes here, and then the whites will love us. I'm sorry, that approach doesn't work. I really disagree with you on that approach. You have to get together for your basic rights, and some people are going to be shitheads in any group. You know that,
right?
Well, I don't think you should be kicked out of your house because
I'm not going to go up and hug every every corporate, every guy in a press suit.
Right.
You know, but I'm not gonna blaspheme them all as idiots, and say that they're good for nothing, because a lot of them have built up from the bottom up where they are in their business world, and then there are the ones that stepped on as many faces and
like you live in a house right now, right?
You get where they are.
You live in a house, right?
Yeah, I rent a plumbingless dwelling.
Right, I got you. Well, let's suppose that's, you know, you don't feel it's your job to run around policing everybody else and every other dwelling to make sure they're all...
I got to do it in my own front yard. I got to freaking...
No, wait a minute. What I'm saying is that if there are other people who live in houses like you do and they start acting badly, then that might reflect on you. So why don't you run around and police all those people to make sure they don't act so badly?
Where I live is a cocaine... I mean, it's cocaine central, you know, and it's like when I walk home, I get approached by people that want me to sell them drugs.
I'm not talking to people outside. You're missing my point. I'm saying people who live in houses also act in a shitty fashion.
But
you don't propose to run around and police all those people, do you?
If my neighbor's an asshole and he's being an open asshole, I'm going to check him.
Yeah, but you see, that's the point. If you have a neighbor, he can be an asshole without being an open asshole. But if you're homeless, unfortunately, like you're in a goldfish bowl. That's the problem.
Well, now that we're on a common ground, or we're at a plateau. I mean, let me suggest is where it comes into concern for me is because we got that established. That there are bad apples in each bunch,
sure,
and that they are among them, and everybody would like to see a thinning of, you know what I mean, going back to a nomadic style homeless that used to be back in the 90s, in the early 90s, the late 80s, which I saw a large group movie.
70s,
and they used to rotate, and they don't rotate anymore, and that's being I'd like to do the research in there. And that's where you could, I mean, you have, like, you just went down to L.A., I heard you say, and you have a lot of activist things going down in Santa Barbara. Have you still been involved down there?
A little bit.
And I mean, and you, personally, I think, I mean, it's been said on KSCO that, I mean, you, by Kenneth Cole, he said, yeah, he'd like to see what you know and your research and what you have apply to solutions. And, I mean, over in San Jose, they're suggesting pulling counties together because of the countywide problem
right.
is there. It's and that's a case of actual people that have just folded their leases and pack up and still have their stuff in storage and are desperate homeless, not comfortable. People that have gotten to the past the point of return. I consider that like I agreed with them that the point of no return is like in California, as opposed to most other states, is years.
Let me respond to.
If somebody's homeless for 3 years, there's no return. They aren't going to be able to get into a place without.
I've never heard that figure before. That's interesting. But let me point out to you that you know I and others like me, other activists, Linda LeMaster, Becky Johnson, Skidmark Bob, who was homeless once and isn't. You know, I mean, there are all kinds of folks who have done a lot of. You know, contributed to this, Dan Hopkins. We have put in literally hundreds of hours with commissions. I don't just mean on the streets. I don't just mean standing up and protesting. I mean sitting down and working over the table and working over solutions. These people, you got to understand, don't want solutions. They want you gone. They want your ass out of here.
There are homeless.
They don't care if you're good looking or bad looking, man.
They don't want a lifestyle. They don't want an easy lifestyle. They're not protesting so much for an easy lifestyle, is they want a way easier to get back into. I mean, that's a rent. Then it becomes rent issues. Then it becomes, you know what I mean. But the homeless, it's not really so much the rent issues.
The only
I like one guy. He pointed out in an interview that if you take. And take five homeless people and say, okay, we have five homeless people, I have $7,500 each, but you have to show up tomorrow and listen to my terms as to how to use the $7,500. Boom, there goes three of them.
You know, Carl, the only time that these people, the only thing these people want to do is they want to see you out of here. You know, they are not interested in helping homeless people other than setting up token programs that help a few people. There is no general concern about this issue in any real way.
Well, then you get the people that abuse that.
See, well, you keep going back to that. That's not it.
There's people that will abuse a gift horse.
They're not concerned about the people.
You can only open your heart so far.
They're not concerned with, not concerned with the people who abuse it. They're concerned with the people who use it. They're concerned with the prejudices of the people on the West Side who just don't like the idea at all anyway.
Well,
and that's the point.
People that provide services get discouraged when they see the same person for like 5 years. You know, and
you know, I don't think I'm going to convince you. I think you are pretty much of one opinion, which I understand is not my opinion. We disagree. Let's agree to disagree, and let me give you let me give you 30 seconds to sum up, and let's
okay.
proceed. Go ahead.
It's I'll just leave it at that. It's good that I'd like to see your research applied to solutions, Robert.
Me too.
I think you can really.
Hey, look, the research is there. It's all been done.
Ken Cole can
call me anytime, caller. Ken
True.
Cole can get on the phone. He knows my phone number.
Do you know the migration patterns of homeless through San Francisco?
I don't think anybody
San
does.
Jose,
but like, no, I don't.
I think you're in the position to do that. I think you could. I don't know if you're involved in Palo Alto at all.
A little bit, but you know, that would be of interest to me. But it's not something that I really have the information
that's
on. But
that's you know, so you see, you're
they could hire somebody to go do that if they wanted. You know, that's true. But you see, they've spent millions of dollars studying these things. They just don't want to do shit with their studies. They have the Homeless Issues Task Force study. They have the Task Force to Examine the Camping Ordinance study. They have all kinds of studies. They don't want to do anything with them because they don't want to provide real services and real alternatives. Unfortunately, they don't want to do it.
So are you against surveying too? Just real quick, just in closing, are you against surveying too?
No, I'm not against surveying.
I have a survey.
We do surveying every Monday or week or two. We go out to the Homeless Services Center. We do surveys.
And
you
do ask like some. Do you ask for? What kind of, you can go into it off the air real quickly, but what kind of questions
why don't you give a call to 423-HUFF, and actually, or you might give a call to Becky Johnson, who's in the phone book. She actually has been doing that kind of survey on how the services are being used, And, you know, you might be able to give her some suggestions.
I'm talking services. I'm talking why people are on this.
Right. Well, that's part of the question, too. Give her a call. If she's in the she's in the book under Johnson, J-O-H-N-S-O-N.
I think you could really flip some head, Roberts, if you pulled together some research with other activists in other areas.
I got volumes of research ready for anybody who wants to read it. And I'd love to do some more. I'll talk to you later.
All right.
Bye-bye. And phone lines are open, 427-3772. Lots of archiving to do at Old Huff headquarters. You want to volunteer to help with that. Fight Your Ticket Project needs help. I was talking about Huff projects that need some assistance. Here's an incoming call. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Good morning, Free Radio.
Hey.
I would like the opportunity to underscore a couple things I just heard.
Okay.
One is from the caller. I think it's an important thing for us to be out front and honest. Everybody in the community, out in front and honest about the fact that there's a whole bunch of people that prey off of unfortunate people, prey off of homeless people, you know? And I don't just mean people that have an addiction. Of course, desperate people are going to act desperately. I mean people that intentionally hustle others. They find they can do it more easily for people that are already kind of at the edge or margins of society. And we need to be honest about that so that people who are scared of those guys don't get confused and think it's the homeless people who they're scared of. You know? It's like they've become the niggers of the new century. And we need to break that and not let anyone talk and think like that in public. Mm. And then there was something that you were kind of saying I want to underscore too, and that is that now, I'm just talking about the city of Santa Cruz, although it might apply across the county and across the country. I just don't have that knowledge personally. Mm-hmm. But every time you hear some bureaucrat or elected official saying,